8171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown. Two things that have came up, basically three things from listening to that, the last comments going through. The first one was with the setbacks, and then the setbacks versus where the dwelling is placed for the setback. I've had in my own predicament with the housing and the distance from the neighbor's dwelling come in to pay to come in place to protect my interest. As to whereas it says 50 feet off the property line for a certain structure, then a certain element, and then it says 100 feet from the neighboring dwelling. Where my neighbor had built the house was far, way far back. If the placement wasn't the second placement for the distance from the setback versus the dwelling where the house came into play, I would have had basically a pig pen, a livestock with the pigs up in the front, roughly 78 feet from my house. The second 100 feet from the dwelling protected me from having that. If he would have just been able to go off the first 50 feet, I would have been in nightmare land, worse than I already am. The other part is what I've been trying to differentiate for the longest time, and I hear it again. You have the farms that want it, that are up for sale, a bigger farm, a real farm. Give them the big sign to put it up there for commercial real estate sign to sell it. The smaller thing who's basically claiming to sell their property, give them a smaller one to keep it in perspective. But to get back to what I originally, and the main problem that I have with this, and I need it done, is, sorry about that, my phone reset, is to come back to 159, page 10 and 11 at the very bottom. This, if you can just follow me on this, if you can read where I'm going. 115-159-1 is what I'd like to start off with first, is number 4. Non-illuminated on-premise signs not to exceed 3 signs, of which each sign shall not exceed 32 feet on any side or facing sign area per side, identifying any truck, garden, orchard, nursery, commercial greenhouse, produce sale, or public sale permitted on the same property, on the same premises. That's number 4. When I read that, I take that as any size acreage, as a small little GR lot, a small little AR lot, if it's an MR or HR also, wherever it's at in the code. I take it as an orchard. I take orchard, is it a farm or not a farm? It's like it has the farm use, I would think. But if you go to number 3, and this is why I would like the county and someone here to ask for this, is a definition of a farm. Where do we start at what size? Where do we start for dollar amount, or however it can be incorporated? Because if I read, and then if you go to number 3, right above it, one non-illuminated on-premise sign not to exceed 6 square feet on any side facing of the sign, area per side, identifying a permitted home occupation on the premises or a permitted use on a farm of 5 acres or more. As far as I would understand it, permitted use is, an orchard is a permitted use on any size acreage in Sussex County. Is if you have an orchard and you're at 4.9 acres, if I'm reading this correctly, can you if you're at 4.9 acres, you can have 3 signs each with 32 square feet. But if you're 5.1, if you're on a farm of 5 acres, your signs not to exceed 6 square feet. Does the orchard not become a farm at 5 acres? Or how does that work with the sign? If it's saying on a farm, a permitted use, my assumption, if I'm reading that and looking at that, how can a 50-acre farm orchard be limited to one sign? And yet somebody who has 2 acres doing an orchard for a permitted use for a bit, be allowed 3 32-square-foot signs? It comes into the fact, the way the code is written, with this any farm use, any truck use permitted, any nursery uses, in the whole nine yards. It has to get a specific size amount in there. It has to get in the code, because it's totally illogical to try to send out the enforcement and have a 4.9 acre here with all the signs, and the legit farm at, oh, not, I apologize. A legit farm, in my opinion, is anybody who's doing it where they're where it's permitted to have the income level for sale and have a business profit from it to use it in that. I believe in that 100%. But I'm just totally confused on shortchanging the ones that are farmers and having hobbyists somehow come in and take away from their right, take away from the respect that you give the farmers. With as much agriculture as in this county, I would think that it would be prospective to have the definition in there for it, and not, it's illogical the way it's wrote when you go through it with the whole entire code. And I mean, we got, am I correct? And if I can ask this, if anybody can ask this question to powers to be, is, am I correct with the orchard as that statement that a 4.9 orchard can have the six signs or the 32-inch signs? And if an orchard is on a farm above 5 acres, can only have one?
Is that true? Jamie, is that
Mr. Sharp?
Does anybody follow us? On the farm issue here?
I don't have the AR section of the code in front of me. But I do note in this one that he's referring to 159.1A3, which talks about a home occupation on the premises or a permitted use on a farm of 5 or more acres. That's the one with 6 square feet. The 32 square feet would be for the truck garden, orchard, nursery. I don't have that section of the AR in front of me, so I can't answer that.
Well, we'll try to figure that one out then. Okay.
But that would answer a lot of questions. There's enough definitions in this ordinance. If you're ever going to put it in, you have four attorneys all working on it. Maybe one of them can take the lead on it and come up with something acceptable for everybody.
Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak, sir?
Jason Dean, JD Sign Company, 10152 Sunnyside Road, Bridgeville. So I want to go back to Mr. Arlette's question about size. Yes, size matters, as they would say. With the on-premise message centers, like at a standard brick-and-mortar mom-and-pop business, traditionally they have smaller signs. So we need to move those words and images out of the way, because we may only be able to fit 2 or 3 words and then bring in the next set of words for it to be able to read, where if we're limited to 32 square feet and it says, please elect so-and-so, please elect might take up the slide, and then so-and-so may be the next slide that needs to come in based on the small size of the sign. So I wanted to just bring that up before it was fresh in my mind. What I keep hearing from many people is, who cares? Who cares? We've been to all these hearings over and over and over, repeat ourselves over and over, and there's no one from the public that's here to complain. Never. Today's another day that I missed getting my son off the bus. Last Thursday was another night that I didn't get put him to bed. And I'm getting kind of tired of it. I've listened to a lot of opinions, feelings. Feels distracting. Thinks tacky. What I haven't heard is facts, figures, and data, which backs that up. Mr. Arlette asked for data. We provided that data. It was a Texas A&M study that was done. It's longer than I'd like to read, honestly. We've provided that data. We haven't seen anything back from council other than feelings and opinion. And I feel that we've offered up, you know, look, something that nobody has talked about is the county is going to increase yearly fees on sign permits. There's not one person that stood up here and said, oh, no, we can't increase these fees. You know, we want to help you with this, give you something that's enforceable. We offered good, enforceable brightness standards. That's the real issue. It's enforcement and brightness on the animation. On the technical end of things, if you look at sections 11A, 1 and 2, which references...
Which page?
I'm sorry, that would be pages 12 to 15. So this is actually section 7. Section 11 and section 7 and 8 kind of go hand in hand here. You got to stay with me. I didn't write this. You guys did. So section 7, number A5. In addition to each store, shop, similar unit shall be permitted on-premise illuminated awning, marquee, projecting wall sign, or electronic message display. Not exceeding a combination of all signs, not exceeding 150 square feet. Then if you go to section 11, and I will have you a page 22. If we go into the very same district, it says in section 2, which would be C1, general commercial, that only one on-premise electronic message center is permitted per street or road frontage per parcel, and that the sign face shall not exceed 200 square feet of that sign. So essentially, if there's a business that wants a message center on their wall as their business sign, if there's a message center on the pylon, you can't have both. And I don't understand why they couldn't have both if they choose to do so. I think if they want an electronic sign and a pylon, that's an electronic sign. I don't see any reason why not. Why we're going to say, okay, well, you can pick one or the other. Or that's just a technical error when this was written. I'd like to see some clarification on that.
Before we move off of that, Jamie, was that an error on our part, or
when we looked at this before, it was all, you know, we wanted it limited to one per parcel. I think Mr. Dean's brought up a good point, which is, you know, do we want to consider wall signs as well with the electronic message capability there? I mean, that's something brought up at the commission level, and it's something, you know, if council wanted to tweak that, it would probably be an easy tweak to do, where we could say one on-premise electronic message center ground sign, and you could do something similar with the wall sign as well. But it was not included for, you know, it was just limited to one per property.
Okay. And an easy scenario where this could be a conflict, again, as if it's a shopping center situation, and out on the pylon there is an electronic message sign that everyone shares. And then in the multi-tenant units, there would potentially be somebody that would like to use an electronic sign as their signage. That would be prohibited by this ordinance. Other than that, I'd just like to echo what Mr. Hutt and Mr. Phillips said. I think this horse is dead, and I look forward to getting it resolved quickly. Oh, and furthermore, I would like to keep the record open until we hear from planning and zoning, so that way we know what hand we're playing. We close record today. Who knows what P&Z could come back with, and then what council would do. So if
we will consider that.
I appreciate that. Thank you for your time.
Lynn Rogers, Rogers Sign Company, Milton, Delaware, 110 Lavinia Street. I'd like to begin by saying that years ago, this has not been brought up, I've not heard it. DelDOT had a set of sign regulations, and Sussex County got in and out of the sign business several times. And thanks to Mr. Lank, he took the bull by the horns back then and created an ordinance that at that time, he mirrored the state of Delaware as much as possible, because the ordinance that Sussex County originally had, you would come get a permit from here, you go to DelDOT, and they'd say no, you'd come back here, and they'd say, well, we'll let you do this, and then you go back to DelDOT, and it'd be like, you felt like a badminton birdie. And what I was getting at is, back in 2006 and 7 and 8, Mr. Lank worked diligently with one of, I think he was chief inspector at the time, to create an ordinance that tweaked it, tightened it, and made it kind of easily to read. The business could understand it, the sign guy could understand it, and planning and zoning and the state of Delaware were all on the same page. You knew what you could do, and you knew what you couldn't do. This is getting away from that. Talking about Jeff Leonard, we're talking about DelDOT, so they were on the same issue. The variance process that he brought up during the working group, Mr. Cole, you was there one day, and Mr. Arlett, you were there the other day. The only time the variance process would be used at DelDOT, if Mr. Cole had a billboard, and that was his revenue, and Mr. Vincent come along and built a hotel that blocked that billboard, Mr. Leonard said they would consider, at that time, their variance process to not shut Mr. Cole's revenue down and to possibly grant a variance to move that billboard closer than their 300-foot allows so he could see, or allow him to go higher with it. He said they'd never have exercised it, but it's there to use in the event it did occur. That's what Mr. Jeff Leonard said from DelDOT at the working group. But they do have a process that's just never been exercised.
Never been exercised.
Not that Mr. Leonard referred to, but he said that was... his superiors had told him that was the reasoning it was available. But I don't, you know, I've not seen that happen. The videos that were showed earlier, and just want to reiterate that. For instance, the Taylor Marine sign at the end. The frame rate of that sign set at 60. That's like on your television you buy, you know, you get 720 or 420 or 1620, whatever it is. That's a recovery rate. And they have that in there so that your TV and even a video don't look like the old cartoon Speed Racer where it jumps like a security video does. In the case of that one there, the video camera that apparently videoed that, the frame rate was not fast enough. It was trying to do it. It's like you take your cell phone and take a picture of an LED sign. It'll be black lines because your camera's not fast enough to catch it at the 60 frames per second. If you go look at that Taylor Marine sign, the image comes up, there's very little animation, and it stays there for the 10 seconds, real time. So that's a false representation of what that sign is at all. The live video that was spoken of, why these signs have it. These things are used in sports venues, sometimes in lobbies, sometimes in like football stadiums. They have the huge micro screens, but they have the smaller ones throughout the venue. So the signs are made with the capability of live streaming. To do that, you have to have very sophisticated camera equipment, you have to use Cat 5e wire, and there's a converter that has to go on it to make it work to do it. The foreign signs don't have it, but the ones that everyone that buys in this room sells does. It's there as that option to use if you wanted to. Talking about for enforcement of the on-premise LEDs versus proposing to have static on the billboards and the on-premise sign is much smaller. It's very simple for the enforcement, is that in the working group and the proposed ordinance it had in there, and also Mr. Hutt's alternative ordinance, and I believe it's referenced to county planning and zoning, that there's no flashing, no scrolling, no live action video, no sound, that wasn't brought up today, and no streaming video. So you have a checklist and you go out, and if it's not doing that, fine. If it's doing that, that's a function that has to stop. Very simple enforcement that, with that. Also, it's not been brought up here. I was on a working group for the state of Delaware for Governor Minner, and Jeff Leonard was on the committee also, and the head highway engineer ran the committee. And their rules on on-premise signs, they're not really in the enforcement of that anymore, but they'll give you a letter of no objection once you get your permit. But they do have a policy, I guess you would say, because it was brought up in the legislature when they allowed on-premise signs, that the same things I referenced to, no flashing, no scrolling left or right, no live action video, and no sound. DelDOT does not tolerate that and will not tolerate that. They did have complaints on flashing. There was a sign on the western side of the county years ago that was put up, and they had a bright background, and they had a message flashing, and also after it flashed, it scrolled. And DelDOT took objection to that, and that was when they put that in their policy at the time. So DelDOT does not allow that either. So the enforcement would be very easy, that the working group said if you had a checklist and anybody went out and did that. Just in closing, for what I got to say is what Mr. Hunt referenced to with a storage place in Rehoboth that sits way back off the road, and the pylon sign that they had that was probably put up 35 years ago, they were concerned that having a permanent prescribed easement, the way they were referred to it as, and not being able to have their sign. The facility that's being built now, the bowling alley, they've been granted an entrance off of Route 1 onto someone else's property. The owner of the property has graciously, on the north end of that property, allowed them to have 50 feet as a permanent prescribed easement that's going to be recorded. It has been recorded, I believe. And that permanent prescribed easement and the DelDOT entrance and exit basically becomes their possession. Because if that's a recorded easement, Mr. Moore can probably tell you this, that it's basically theirs for their usage, and they can't be taken away once it goes through the legal process of becoming theirs that way. Their concern is that they're spending millions of dollars back there in that corner, and they didn't know that they would not be able to have a sign because it's become off-premise for an on-premise application. And it would be easy if they could, something in the ordinance when this rare occurrence does occur, that if that permanent prescribed easement to that property to get them access, use the word contiguous, to their property, they'd be permitted an on-premise sign on their easement. Very simple to do that. But they was worried about that. I just wanted to echo that. Mr. Cole had a question about who came up with the distance between electronic message centers on the highway. Why did DelDOT say, what was it, 2,500 feet or whatever mm-hmm. it was? That was a long discussion years ago for the Federal Highway Administration. And they weren't thinking of Route 1. They weren't thinking of 113 or coastal, or 13. That was made for interstates. That 95, or you went 70 miles an hour, or 50, I was on 155 last Sunday. In the billboards, you're going so fast that the regulations on the national level were that distance apart. Electronic message centers at that point in time weren't even discussed. But
No, it's 2,500 feet apart just for electronic messages.
Well, that's what they're saying
that's
here
why
in
I'm
Delaware.
Saying, why do they do that?
Well,
it's not all billboards.
Well, no, on right. interstates, they have to be 600 feet back from the highway, and that's the reason
okay.
that was created. And I guess they just said, okay, we'll do it. Where we do it, Delaware, we'll do it. Because the state of Delaware did approve electronic message centers. Governor Mark Kell endorsed it because they put it on the north end of Delaware on 95. They got it off the road, and they gave it to Crime Stoppers pretty much, and it's done a good job for them. So that's where that come from. But Mr. Hutt's alternative ordinance, I wouldn't call it totally alternative because it's much of the, his ordinance is your ordinance. It just tweaked it to make it business friendly. And I don't think anything in that ordinance, it took a lot of what the working group had done. And it took what Mr. Lank had done years ago and incorporated it to try to make it a document that you can do here, go to the state of Delaware and have no problem. And there is those circumstances with variances. I don't care how perfect you try to make it, that variance is needed a lot. Because a lot of times, you know, I've seen where we've had it happen, where a billboard was put up 40 years ago that was poles, became a concern, slightly maybe unsafe. And the owner of the property wanted to make it an on-premise steel structure sign, just go from wood to steel, not changing the size, the height, or anything. And in the meantime, while that billboard was there and the individual was getting his income, somebody had the right, had by right on the property next door, it was commercial, they put a building up. And it somewhat blocked that billboard. And what it did was, the it was just farmland originally, but it was commercial. And it was, the billboard was put up, then the commercial property next to it developed, and you couldn't see the billboard anymore. So who was there first, you know, he said, she said, or whatever. The variance process came into effect. When the properties were subdivided, the side setback of 50 feet couldn't be met. It was like they had to have a 5-foot variance for the setback because 5 feet, they lost 5 feet. So the variance process worked. It wasn't something out of the way. But I think it should be there for that discussion to occur when it's needed to happen. And sometimes, you know, the board adjustment will tell you no. And the majority of the variances that I monitor are for the six, go from 300 to 600 square feet and the height up to 35 feet, what it used to be. Pure and simple. There's very few things you can ask for a variance on a billboard.
And what would be the hardship for those to go higher and go bigger?
When they go from wood to steel,
it's a hardship. You know that. I mean,
well, there has been one hardship was they had a billboard, a building had been built where it was at, and it partially blocked the southbound side, so they wanted to go up 10 feet to 35, and it put them above the roof height, and it worked. It was a hardship. They showed a hardship. They showed relief is what planning or Board of Adjustment requires.
Buildings are 40, 60 feet back, and signs are 25 feet.
It blocked part of the billboard because the billboard was back because of a del dot intersection.
Okay.
Everything is site-specific, and can't compliment Mr. Lank a lot for his years of service of doing looking at these things, and a lot of times I tell you no. It's a fact, but most of the time it's worked out through the variance process. But I hope that the everything was said today by all the people in the industry, Mr. Hutt, is taken seriously. I felt the hearing at the Planning and Zoning Commission was very good, and they sit there and listen very hard. So I'm kind of anxious and cautiously optimistic that what their decision will be Thursday night. Thank you.
I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
I understood you say it was very difficult to get sign permits years ago, but between the county and the state, you had to go back and forth. Do you think we've improved now? Do you think our roads are better looking now that we have the signs, more signs, and it's easier to get them? Do you think that's an improvement?
I think that the industry dealt with what was the hand that was dealt them. When being in the business, as Mr. Arlett said, you're in the business whether you got a billboard or not. I won't fabricate a sign. It's a matter of opinion. If people think signs are eye pollution, they're going to be eye pollution.
Well, I guess yes is the
right
answer.
If they think it's going to be, that's a matter of opinion. My opinion is if they meet the code, I go by the code. That's what I have to do. Until it's like stopping at a stop sign. Until they change that law, I have to stop. So basically, it's a matter of opinion.
Real quick, Mr. President, I this is something that we haven't even discussed through all of this. You know, and I kind of you made a couple comments which made me think about this, and I don't even know our sign partners or business owners or even this council, but you know, one good thing about the EMCs, which is why people like them in general, is because you can change it, right? For very little, or really basically no money. You know, it's a computer-driven thing. So I'm wondering, is it even possible or feasible, or if there is an idea out there that could float? Because at times, you know, we actually have real public emergencies in this community. And, you know, is it feasible for our partners, if you would, or those that have the EMCs to be able to put up a real emergency, i.e. evacuation situation, and we put it out there
mm-hmm.
Number one, would they be willing to do it? Or number two, is it something that we could even make it part of the license or the permit to require it? I'm wondering, because in the end, it's something I think that that could be utilized for the benefit of the public in a true emergency, i.e. the governor says we have a state of emergency. And if that comes down, then part of the permitting process, you have to display. I'm wondering, we've never discussed this?
I think there was some discussion in the prior hearings on the prior ordinance where there was some testimony, I believe, by some people in the sign industry that indicated that obviously those signs could be used for that purpose. You know, whether there was some of the different alerts that are out there now, Mr. Sharp?
Yeah.
If I may, that was a recommendation at the working group level. I believe Clear Channel was actually one who suggested that, if I recall.
They partnered with the county.
Could have been one I was in. I don't remember.
Their point was these things do have those capabilities. One of the concerns, though, is having government kind of force somebody to put something on their sign. You know, rather than having something in the code, maybe the suggestion there would be you could we would have an idea of who these folks are that have the EMCs, and when there's these emergencies, maybe we could figure out a way to send them a message and ask them, hey, would you be willing to put this on there?
I'd like to hear what they think, if it's something that they would be agreeable to, enforceable, or, I mean, I'm just curious.
To put up the signs. It's the people who end up owning the signs.
Correct.
These are installed.
No, I know, but they know their clients.
Well, obviously, all of them are going to say yes. If there's an emergency, they will want to help.
I don't know.
I can't imagine anybody not wanting to help.
Yeah, to answer your question, the signs are capable of doing that.
Sure.
The ones that are here.
I know that.
Reference, if the people, like George says, when there's a catastrophe, everybody wants to help. The state of Delaware, in the workshop that I was in, when Amber Alerts were coming into effect and they were looking into legalizing billboards, the legal counsel of the state, I think at the time it was Fred Schrank. Yeah, Fred. He was concerned about if a message was to go out on Amber Alert, reference a child or something or whatever, the reason was a storm or whatever, that they would want to put the message out to whoever's putting it on there so it's exactly right and not one word wrong and something occurred that, you know, they picked the wrong child up or whatever. So the liability was there, but if Joe at the EOC wanted to put a message out about an evacuation, I'm sure the consumer would do that, and I mean the business center would do that. The sign's capable of it. It just have to be make sure, Mr. Sharp, have to make sure that, like, if you, a message is going out, emergency, you just don't put it up there. I just won't put it up on my sign because I heard it on the radio. It have to be official notice go out by the state requesting people do that, and they put that message up there. So, and you can even do it electronically if they wanted to.
So, how would you suggest it be addressed? Just as a recommendation, or is it something that could be part of the permitting process that if this happens, then you need to do that, or I don't know.
I think Mr. Sharp had the answer to that.
Let the state.
Yeah.
The state's going to call an emergency. Let the state
right.
worry about
right.
the message out.
But as far as the county, if you know there's a limited state emergency, and Mr. Lawson and Joe feel that there's got to be evacuations, I think Mr. Sharp's answer was on the target of just suggesting it to the businesses, and I think you'd see them all have it up there in a short amount of time. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address this, sir?
Good afternoon, County Council. I'd like to introduce myself, Merritt Burke IV, CEO of SCORE. I've been on the job for about 6 weeks. I'm late to the game, but I'm learning quickly about the sign ordinance. I have a few comments that I'm going to summarize from the letter that you've received. Number one is that SCORE is a member-driven organization, 1,500 members. To date, they have sold $1 billion worth of property, 3,542 actual properties. Each one of those properties probably had a sign on it at some point before it was sold. I will concede that some of those properties are found on the internet, but nonetheless, the sellers do require that a sign is placed on the property. SCORE supports a modern sign ordinance, so we applaud your efforts by researching and looking at this ordinance. However, we have a few positions we'd like to convey. First of all, SCORE opposes the elimination of animation and movement. We think that's critically important to many of the brokerages that have current signs, including SCORE's own sign, where we do have a commercial affiliate program where we sell advertising in the building and outside of the building. Second, we do support a separation of residential and non-residential. So regarding the commercial signage, we're supporting 64 total square feet or 32 square feet, 4x8 per sign, per A-frame signage. The commercial realtors that are within our organization tell me that the majority of their contacts and leads are found by driving by large tracts of land and or commercial properties. Lastly, SCORE would like to be part of the solution as you move forward and continue to keep the record open to make sure that property rights in this county are defended and that real estate continues to assist with the county budget. So with that being said, I thank you for your time. And unlike Mr. Dean, I don't have to pick up my kids from the bus. They are home with my wife. So thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this matter? Anyone else? At this point, Mr. President, I believe we can close the public hearing on this matter. I know you did discuss the possibility of keeping the record open.
We will close the public hearing, but I think we leave the public record open for written comments after PNZ renders a recommendation. But I would think, and you tell me how to word this, but those written comments should only pertain to the recommendations from PNZ that are different than the introduced ordinance.
I think that would be a fair way of handling that, and that way it limits what the comments are, because we've heard the comments from the public today. So it would be limited to those recommendations that would come from planning and zoning. You should put a time limit on that, because yeah. We also have this possibly the 30th. They would need to come in by then.
That would be the end of next week.
I'm sorry?
That would be the end of next week, 30th, right. Next Friday.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I personally, again, I wouldn't be opposed to keeping the public comment period open, allowing whomever to come back and address whatever PNZ comes back with, because in the end, and a couple of concerns that provide, however, put a time limit on their quote-unquote additional testimony. Allow them 3 minutes or whatever it is. But I personally I think it would be relevant to have somebody come back and provide 3 minutes of testimony to address what PNZ's response is.
Well, I guess my thought was previously everything we've ever done has been allowed written comments.
Yeah. No, I know.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you.
And give them so many days to respond in writing. And the thought about what PNZ recommends adopting, what change, if they make any changes to introduced ordinance, is the fact that we've been here for at least a year now.
Sure.
And we've had lots of comments. But I think we certainly want to allow anybody to make comments on what they propose to change in that ordinance, if that makes reasonable sense, everybody. Well, yeah, but I mean, as Mr. Dean said, nobody knows what's going to happen if they adopt something Thursday night. And once they adopt that, if they make any changes, I think that people should have the opportunity to comment on that change.
Great. I concur. That sounds reasonable. Mm-hmm. We've done it that way before. It's just no sense changing.
I can motion be that way.
Motion, Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Mr. Cole. Let me get this right. That we leave the public comment period open till the 30th of September, that whatever change is made by PNZ at their adoption, hopefully Thursday night, the public can make written comment on anything that they propose to change. So then the public has the opportunity to speak on something they weren't aware of, obviously, right. Today.
And close it at 4:30. On the 30th.
Yeah.
That would give Mr. Lank an opportunity to bring those comments before council on, I believe, the 3rd, 4th is the next meeting in October, first meeting, and that would then give an opportunity for either vote that day or the following week, which still meets the prior to the moratorium.
The moratorium would expire on the 11th. The 11th of October.
11th, I think.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
The 11th?
Yeah. So that would give us two meetings to...
To do that.
To review the comments.
Right.
Any questions on that motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Arlette?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
I believe there was...
Now then, we had... We had a conditional use 2053 Red Dog Plumbing and Heating. Are they... I bet he's here now.
Yes.
Huh? I bet you wish you were here earlier, don't you?
I paid my price.
I do apologize. I guess you guys were already on your reading a long time ago about it.
Shoot, so. We're good. We're all right. We're all right.
I'm Ken Wood, 37058 Roxana Road, Selbyville, and it is Red Dog Plumbing and Heating. And I'll just try to reiterate what I said when I met with P&Z.
Sure. We might want to have to reopen again.
Okay.
We didn't close
yet.
I know, but I don't know, you were all talking and all this stuff's going on.
Okay.
Give the case number yet, as far as he's concerned.
I had you not read all your information?
I read the whole report.
Yes, you had read all that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is 2 hours yeah. later.
And then it was
yeah.
just a report the council asked.
But I'm sure.
I'm
does the council have any questions on what Mr. Lank read?
Wait, go for it. Go for it.
So let me get it back up. We're good. Okay.
Oh, we've got to
get
it back.
Yeah, I got it.
And if there are no questions, then, sir, if you'd
the
like to introduce yourself and.
I'm looking for a hello.
You're right. I got a
hello. I will ask you a question.
Just introduce yourself.
Okay, let the applicant do his presentation.
And we'll ask questions.
Pardon, please.
Am I ready?
Yes, okay. You are ready.
Let's try this again. All right, Ken Wood, 37058 Roxana Road, Selbyville, Delaware, Red Dog Plumbing and Heating. And bought a property back in January, February time frame that is a residential property, and it's zoned AR1, I believe, and wanted to run a business out of it. It's a small business. We have six vehicles total, which include my pickup truck, my other half's car, and then we have four work vans. I have three HVAC techs, and I have a plumber as well. Not too big, and when we bought the place, we did some renovations to it, widened the driveway to make it look much neater than what it used to look, and the end goal was just to make it be a better-looking place than what it was and to run the business out of there. And that's pretty much it.
Did you say this year, January?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had, okay, well.
Do you have adequate off-street parking for the vehicles?
We do, and actually all the vans go home at night, so nothing stays there other than my truck.
And your other half's car.
Yep, that's it. That's it. It's so small it might not even count.
And you use the existing entrance on the property?
We do. We just happen to widen it. It's okay. Much wider than what it was.
Did you have to build a new building on the property for
no,
this?
No, we did not. It already had a two-car garage with a couple areas to it, and then the house suffices as the office as well.
I have a question, too. I know Commission talked about the fact that the owner would be living, does live there.
Mm-hmm.
If that were a condition of approval, would that be a problem?
No, it wouldn't be a problem.
It would not be a problem?
No.
Thank you. Sorry. I think I might like to do that. So
okay.
It's nice to say that it's a good thing, but I think people should have some assurance about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, just enforcement would be knocking on the door occasionally and saying,
knock.
Hi,
who?
What's your name?
Are you Red Dog?
Are you Red Dog?
That might be my dogs.
You might get bit.
That's right. They're not too big. It can't hurt
them. I don't know.
That's my question. That's all I had.
No, I'd have, you know, I don't know. Just the enforcement of it would be awkward. To send an inspector up there because somebody calls up and says, it doesn't look like Red Dog's living there anymore. And I don't know if that's...
I'm sure you are right, Mr. Cole.
No, I'm just suggesting that might be a very awkward thing for inspection.
Let's stick with what we have.
Any more questions of Red Dog?
Well, the only opposition was from the town of Selbyville. Do you have any comments to, based on what they... given us here, and they oppose it because of you're contiguous to some R4 zone. I guess it's in the town limits.
I did a little research after I heard that night. Mm-hmm. The best, to my knowledge, is that the mayor owns some property around there. That can be the only thing I can possibly figure out.
The property on two sides of you is within incorporated limits of something.
That, and I believe he owns the property too.
And the road's on the other side, so you're an enclave between the road and the test, their concern.
It's the only thing I could figure out, that would be it. But other than that...
I read that they felt that that was part of their growth area, but I don't see where that has any legal standing. I mean, that they would like, well, you know, does it...
Well, certainly, but comment to that, certainly the property owner has to request to be annexed to the town. The town just can't come in and say, we should be in the town annexing.
Right.
So unless you plan on going to town with the annexed...
No, quite the opposite at this point.
Well, it's there you are.
That's right. There we go. So was it, very good.
I think the town's point was that they want to know that the council considered their comments and their recommendation, because the memorandum of understanding between the county and the town basically says, we will try to cooperate in actions to take place on our side and when they do something on their side.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I assume planning is only read that same letter.
The planning's only got the same letter basically with a different date on it.
Okay, all right, that's cool.
And they did consider it, even discussed it.
Okay.
So noted in the report.
Did you have any other witnesses or anything else you would like to add?
No.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone else in favor? Seeing none, is there anyone that would like to speak in opposition to this application? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter. And if it's the council's prerogative, close the record.
We'll close public hearing. It's okay, Mr. Council, close public record. Ask Mr. Moore to read the short title.
An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for an HVAC business to be located on certain parcels of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 1.10 acres, more or less, for reasons given by planning and zoning numbered 1 through 4 with conditions 5A through H.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mr. Arlett. To grant conditional use number 2053 for the reasons stated and for the with the conditions that placed by planning and zoning. Questions on the motion? We will now take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
I'm voting yes with planning and zoning. I took Selbyville's letter very seriously, and but I really feel that we should approve this. And it's because there are many reasons given and there are many conditions associated with what planning and zoning has given us.
Cole.
I'll vote yes for those conditions. It's very similar to a home occupation, and even though the gentleman will have probably some employees and stuff, it's not much of a difference. And I'll vote yes.
Drawlett.
I too shall... vote yes per recommendations of planning and zoning as set forth with those conditions. And, you know, Route 17 is an appropriate location for something like this. So I would definitely say yes.
I'd vote yes for P&Z.
I also agree with planning and zoning's reasons and conditions. I also vote yes. Motion carried. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
So moved.
Motion Mr. Harlett. So moved. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll now take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Arlett.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I will yes. We're now adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks
ladies.
For coming.
Go, Red Dog.
Thanks for coming. You probably know more about signs now than you ever wanted to.
Yeah, don't be asking.